I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, Chris?
2019.
It's a whole nother thing. We'll have to, you know, we'll have to get you guys bringing it over to London. You know nothing about that. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So Lisa Bolakaja is out, but she will be back in 2 weeks, finally, when you come back from your thing. Mm-hmm. We'll be back, and we will get it in. So today we got my man Chris Derrick in the house, writer, producer, cinephile himself, director. What's going down?
It's good, baby.
Look at it.
It's
mouth full of food.
Things are good. Things are good.
I love it.
Excited. You're excited about what's happening. Things that, you know, I'm like the secret yes. excursion is happening next week.
And the short trip, we should say that.
Short trip.
Instead of saying I'm going out of town, people get that twisted. They're like, where is he going? He's leaving us.
Yeah, I'm on a short trip.
No, I'm just going on a short trip. I'll be gone just a week.
Right.
A little more than a week. So that's cool. I'm doing that. I'm just doing a bunch of writing. I got to prep some things. I got to turn to something for that Imagine mm-hmm. thing just due today. I'm almost done with that. And then, I'm good. It's good.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we got to talk. I got some shit going on I got to tell you about. That's what's up. So if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get on into the show. So today we got my big sister in the house, Jenny Frankfurt, y'all.
Hello.
Former manager. Now you run the Finish Line screenplay competition?
Script
competition. Yeah. Yes, of course.
Pilots and screenplays.
Yes, of course. How many years you guys been doing it now?
This is our fourth year.
Fourth year.
Yeah.
Wow, just zoomed.
It has zoomed.
Man. Like y'all on the map now.
Yeah, we're getting on that map. Space on that map.
Right. Yeah. So I just want to say a little disclaimer. I've you know, and we've talked about this before. There are several competitions that, you know, that I'm behind, and yours is one of them because of you.
Well, thank
and
you.
I know you're a big component and supporter of writers, know, and you do something different than most of the other screenplay competitions do. That I appreciate.
Thank you.
So
yeah, our focus is on rewriting and helping the writer make the script better while in the competition.
Right.
You know, I've never
who
understood
does that?
I think I say this every time I come here, but I was just saying it to somebody the other day. What is the point of getting notes on a screenplay that you've entered into a competition after the competition is over?
True.
That's how it started.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because I got notes back on something a couple of years ago, and I just was like, it was like 3 or 4 months after
you've already polished it 9 times since then.
I've changed it, you know. You know, and to me, the worst thing is that I should have got the notes back with the rejection letter. Number one,
right,
it didn't happen. So I'm like, so when it came, I was kind of like, why am I getting this now?
Yeah,
and I kind of feel like every writer will tell you that writing is rewriting, and that, and to not be able to make an adjustment on the work while it's still in competition is just crazy to me. I remember you on last year, we were talking about this, and I was like, oh, that's really cool, because every other aspect of, you know, stuff that you're doing with your film, with your script, with your TV show, they're like, there's always that, like, it's being edited until they have to give it up.
That's right. You know? Such a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I remember reading the guy say, you know, I've been watching the Mission Impossible thing because, you know, mm-hmm. I'm all the behind the scenes. And the guy was like, we'll be working on this until 10 days before it's ready to release. Mm. I mean, they might be shooting stuff. They might be doing editing, the music, color correcting. There's visual effects. There's so much stuff. And it's like, why don't you have the opportunity with the writing for these competitions? Because yeah. It's like, you know, I mean, every film comes out and they test it. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. It's not. Guess what? We got to go back and reshoot the whole ending.
That's such a good analogy.
I actually don't think I've ever thought about that either.
I've never thought about that either.
That's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
And then it's not, you know, and they go, oh, and there's a lot they got to do to kind of get it ready.
Right.
Yeah.
Like for release so people can go now. This and then the competition really is that opening weekend.
Right.
You know, so
right.
Is it good enough?
Well, what we do is also, and I do.
Let's just tell everybody about your competition first of all.
So it's the Finish Line Script Competition, and I think there's two major components that we have that make it stand out.
Sure.
That was important to me. The main thing that was important when we created it was the rewriting, which is you can get notes pretty inexpensively, let me tell you.
Right.
Okay, and you get as many pages of notes as it takes to give you notes. We do not stop
crazy.
We only give you 3 notes, so I'm going to cut out pages 14 through 25. You have to figure that out on your own or whatever.
Right.
We just keep writing until we're done, and that means good stuff and critical stuff, and you take what you like and leave the rest, as I always say.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can resubmit it for free. You can just keep working on your own. You can work with the writer's group. You can work with another consultant. You can work with your best friend who's also a writer and rewrite it. Or you can keep coming back to us and keep getting notes. And the person that you keep getting notes from is the same consultant. So it's like
that's
you're working
good.
With a development person at a studio
that's
or
good.
At a network. So that person knows your script. It knows how it's changed. It knows how it's, you know, what notes you took and what notes you didn't. And, you know, so they've got a personal...
Right.
Let me just ask you, connection to
what is the what's the window between when you submit and when
it's like 10 months? I mean,
wow.
We give you almost the full
we open. If you can't fix your script in that time, you need to start doing some other stuff.
You need to have a job.
And the people who don't take advantage of the notes, I always say, like, some people don't have the money, and I totally get that. And we offer so many discounts throughout the year because I'm real sensitive to people's financial situations, especially writers who are usually doing it a lot of people doing a second gig and so on, so they're doing it when they can.
And it's usually one of 10 other competitions they're submitting to.
Well, exactly.
Sure.
And so we have long stretches of time where, like, you have to get your first draft, you know, your final draft in. And the first thing is, like, we opened right before Christmas just in case people wanted to get some work done over the holidays, and their drafts aren't due until, or anybody's draft isn't due until September.
Oh my God.
Which gives you plenty of time. It gives us time to, you know, do all the notes. Mm-hmm. It does take a lot of time because it takes a ton of time because we're thoughtful and we're giving real good notes, and we don't give like numbers where it's just like, that's, I don't know, like a 7,
right.
You know, it's substantive. And and then we, you know, do quarter finalists, and those people can redo them.
Okay.
So that they're like, oh, I got somewhere. Let me see what else I can do to improve this. Well, they don't have to. It's all. But if you want, we'll give you the notes. And yes, you have to pay for those. Still very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, it's just free. People send in new drafts. I've got some people who send in, you know, 20 drafts of a script because they're working on it over 9 people.
Okay, that's a little much.
Yeah, it's a little much, but, you know, I changed a word. I want to say, it's like, all right. But, you know.
But we get it. And you get it.
You get
it's,
it.
It's, you know, like, I just had
They don't at all.
Right. And like, my manager just sent my script out to, I mean, a huge person. And he said, hey, Hillary. I said, and when I first signed, I just signed with him, like, right before Christmas or something, right? Huge manager. And he said, I said, I have one thing that I need from you. He said, what? I says, every time you submit any of my scripts, just hit me up and say, is this the latest version?
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll save you a lot of time. It'll save me a lot of headache.
Yeah.
Because like you said, sometimes you'll just do one word somewhere and you feel, oh my God, I'm so glad
so
I did that. So when they get to that moment, they're going to enjoy it even more.
Yeah.
So that's why I get why they do it. But... in a competition system.
But it's for free, so why not? Right. It's an email sent. Yeah. So that's kind of like the one that really sets us apart. So the second one, which Sebastian, who is here, who's our grand prize winner this year, is here from London. He did rewrites on his script through us. Mm-hmm. And now he's out here, and this is the second part that's the big thing. He's out here meeting 32 mentors.
Oh, my God.
This year, sorry, Sebastian, this year we have 35 mentors, one that's going on as we speak because it's already up and running again. 32 mentors.
Really?
I mean, they're pretty massive people. I mean, they're, you know,
and I know if they came with you, they got some,
You know, they're people I've known for a long time, you know. They're screenwriters, producers, execs at networks and studios, managers, agents, lawyers, you know. So he's here for 2 weeks.
Awesome.
To meet with everybody.
That's a lot
he
of
just
meetings.
Finished his first meet. He's
talk
just
about
finished
the water
his first
bottle
week.
Tour, right?
Finished his first week. I think he's finally a California boy. he had to come to the rain. Exactly. Too,
he's carrying that, what's that thing called? The camo pack. He's got that much water. Because I got to you out a lot, man. 32 meetings in 2 weeks is a lot.
That's a lot.
A meeting. But
that's
it
a
can,
lot in a year
it
for some writers.
Oh, my God.
Come
on,
man.
Totally. Yeah.
I mean,
so, go ahead.
You win a lot. You can win a better script and you win a lot of meetings.
I mean, like, I think it's very, that's the thing that happens with a lot of people. I mean, I was just, someone emailed the other day and they were like, okay, so my script got, it was like a semi-finalist in some competition and she's asking me to help her to introduce it to people. I'm just kind of like,
what happened to the semifinalists?
Yeah. I mean, how do you?
You're just done.
How do you leverage
a lot of those competitions?
Yeah,
how do you leverage that? And if you can't, then it's kind of like, it's almost too, it's crazy because they're taking your money, they're doing all this kind of stuff for you, and then that's all they're doing is they're saying, well, you got close enough.
Close.
Right.
Well, I will say that a lot of competitions, and we are included in this, you know, once quarterfinalists are announced, we start going out to agents and managers who are like, we want to know who the, you know, starting a quarterfinalist who's, you know, and then they have log lines. And so we get the reach is out there. And any competition that's worth their salt should be, you know, have that behind them saying, we're going to, you know, anybody who's interested in this, they're going to get the log. Like,
yeah, I mean, I get them from Austin and from
them,
a bunch
sure.
of,
so,
yeah, definitely.
So we do that. And so do any, if they're not doing that, it's either that her script isn't appealing from the log line, something's not working, that's, you know, make people go, I don't want to read this, or the company or the competition's just sitting back and taking their money.
Right.
But yeah, we're all about trying to make writers. I work with writers who didn't place, I mean, or who didn't win as well, because I think there's something special there. Just because they didn't win doesn't mean I don't want them to meet X person who I think will connect.
Yeah, sometimes it's potential, you know. That, let's go ahead and get into who we have on the show here. So,
Sebastian.
One thing I was setting up earlier is we had you on the show, and I said, you know, when you guys have your winner, you know, we'll have them on the show.
That was very kind.
So
of you
were like, okay, well, let's get it.
Hello, I have my winner.
Exactly. So, welcome to the show, everybody. Sebastian, forgive me, I'm going to kill your last name. Maggiera?
Magiera.
That's what I said.
I know. You said it. You got it exactly right. Exactly right.
I was trying to add some flavor. He's like, Magiera. Like he ain't got no British accent or something. See what I'm
saying? This is meeting 33.
I know.
Think about it. So,
what are you two going to do for him? Okay. Thank you.
So welcome to the show, Sebastian. Come a little closer.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. So what's it been like? Let me ask you this. So what made you submit to this competition in particular? And you better be nice because Jenny's sitting right there.
I almost didn't get out of bed. And I was like, I better go and make sure he says the right things.
<It's cute>.
Yeah.
And what was the process like for you so that other people listening out there can make the decision whether or not they're going to submit?
Well, I have a confession that I wasn't quite aware that we were allowed to resubmit from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
And so then when I got through to the quarterfinal and I read through information, I was kind of like really surprised that you could actually do that. And
you're like, I just so happened that I did a pass on it recently.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's true. You didn't, you submitted it regularly before, just submitted it.
Yeah.
And then you came back for notes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I submitted it quite late as well. And like submit it in, you know, like January or something. Mm-hmm. And then when I found out I could do that and I got the notes from you, I was, you know, I thought that was like fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, it was really good practice as well, right. And for a writer to be able to respond to notes like that.
Right. What were the notes like for you, for the listeners who were just, I'm speaking for them, so just.
Yeah, they're really constructive, you know, very, very thorough. There are a lot of them as well, you know. I've submitted to competitions with notes or for notes, which have been kind of underwhelming, to say the least, you know. So I was really, you know, I was really grateful to even just have that. And then when I got the opportunity to, you know, make changes and resubmit, that was like sort of fantastic, as I said. And then, I just went through them all. I even had a couple of friends also give me their own notes on the notes, you know, and also read the new draft. And you know, and then when I was happy with it, I resubmitted, and I was kind of not expecting to hear back again.
But see, that's
this Sebastian?
That's the way. Sorry, that's the way to. I think that's the way to do it, though. You have to. We talk about this all the time. You submit something and you forget it.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to blank. Don't write down. Oh, May 6th is the day of quarterfinals. Forget it.
Yeah.
Be surprised when you get an email
that
you
were.
Don't look for it. It's horrible.
See, this is interesting. You said this about the notes were constructive. Because, like I said, the last time I got notes on something from a competition, it was kind of a critique about, you know, what they liked and what they, I mean, and there was an issue they had, but they didn't, like, offer anything. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like it's just like when you, it's just like if you're giving, I mean, to me, I don't ever give anybody notes unless I can also pitch a fix, and the fix might not be helpful for them, but at least it lets that person know that, like, I've read your script. I'm not just saying I bumped on this, but it's like, here's how this could maybe potentially work. And I tell everyone all the time, it's like, you don't have to take my note. Just I'm not expecting you to do what I say. I'm saying that this should spur you to think about.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. That's that note That's behind right. the note
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. Right. And we do that. I mean, to a degree, like sometimes I say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if maybe. And I always put.
That sparks a question.
Yeah. Yes. And I always put, like, just a thought, you know, like, I'm not telling you how to rewrite your stuff. It's just like, as I'm reading this.
Here's
this,
what I'm feeling.
This is what I'm feeling.
Yeah, there's some good suggestions. Yeah. I remember there's also praise as well, like some things that we really liked. That's kind of uplifting.
Right.
And, you know, so you realize it's not just a critical, you know.
Right. And you have to have a little bit of that, I think, sprinkled throughout.
Yes.
And it tells the reader, I'm reading this.
Yeah.
You know, to
this
me.
This worked.
Yeah.
It's not just, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, fix.
There's got to be something, because I've even, you know, like I said, read for Sundance and stuff, like there's even. I would find things, like, if there was a script I just absolutely did not connect with, I would look at it and be like, okay, here's where I'm going to have fun writing about it, though. And I'll be like, you know, this character kind of fell a little flat, but if they would be really interesting if they did this, and I'll go on a whole little journey with them and how they could be interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I enjoy writing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's...
That's right.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. It takes away the pressure from me of... Oh, now
page
I got to. Yeah, now I'm just like, oh, now I get to write back.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, it's
well,
an
yeah,
art
because
to it.
See the thing about being a critic, as opposed to being like an actual creative writer who's giving you notes, is you do find that energy of like, oh, what if we changed it like this?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And that is kind of feeding you, where someone who's just a fake critic is just like, I'm not sure, like. Where
it's like
they
a teacher,
get,
you know, it's like a school teacher who just kind of goes wrong, you know,
right,
X
right.
or check X,
yes
check,
and no,
you know, and then like, yeah, 14 out of 20, bye.
I don't know what they get out of it.
Yeah.
So the notes were good. You submitted a second time.
Yeah.
And you said you submitted late the first time. Meaning like right toward the end of the
before the quarterfinal,
right.
basically.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. Pretty much. I hadn't read it at that point when he submitted it again.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I hadn't.
Right.
Doesn't mean that.
And the next couple of times I also submitted for notes again, because I thought they're really helpful. And to be honest, I thought, I mean, they know what they want, they know what's good. And so I thought it was no brainer. I've got to find out what they think of this version and this version.
Right.
That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah, it was just phenomenal. I really think every single competition should do that.
I agree 100%.
Don't let them
They don't have that. A lot of them don't think they have. A lot of them don't think they have the time. And one of the things that I think is the biggest problem, which is why I think yours works a lot, Jenny, is you look at it from a writer's point of view. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are just looking at it like, oh, well, you know, we have this competition. We need a way to get writers out there.
Right.
What the fuck does that mean?
I have no
You know idea. What I mean? it really doesn't mean a lot if you're not really helping them forward.
Right.
You're only helping that one person who wins or those three people who are in the finalists or whatever the hell. Doesn't do you a lot of good for all the other people. You're looking at each and every person.
Right.
Even if they don't win, they got something out of it because they got great. No, whatever.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Whatever. And that's how we started the idea was like, even if you don't win, you mm-hmm. win. Right. I mean, it's cheesy, but you know, you're still, you're now you've got a script that's better than it was before.
That's the key.
And you're writing is a process as well, mm-hmm. as you know, and it's organic. I feel the script is always organic. It's always moving and, you know, changing.
Right.
And so that's what the whole process of that competition.
Here's the interesting thing. So we hear this little fake accent that he has right here.
I'm trying to keep it up.
Been trying to get him working on it.
All right. So this is something that I think is interesting about getting notes, making the changes, like you said, it's organic. Is that to me? It feels like the process you do when you're, like you said, when you're actually developing a script with someone. Because mm-hmm. I think the thing that people don't necessarily realize is even if you sell a script to somebody, they're still gonna give you notes.
God, yeah.
Because
really
they're like, hey, you know what? This is good enough to buy, mm-hmm. but we know that. The directors we have in mind like might want this.
Everybody wants to put their stamp on.
Actors want this. it's and the thing is that it's the thing that like Craig was saying that in that seminar he gives about doing rewrites. It's mm-hmm. like
Craig Mazin.
Craig
Mazin.
Oh, Craig Mazin.
If you keep the thing that he says a lot is you can't think about it as a script.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think about it as the movie or think about it as the TV show. Right. And don't worry about the draft number, how many pages I've done, because your ultimate goal is, you know, the next phase.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that it sounds like from you and from what you're saying that the response that you got was, I'm being emboldened by, you know, the notes they're giving me to make this better because I can now see it come to life more. You know, that to me is what happens with every draft that I'm writing is like it becomes more and more like in my head, like here I'm projecting it in the back of my skull. Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. And I'm kind of like, you know, like to me that's the excitement about it, about the rewriting is like how do you get to those ideas faster, better, quicker. So
mm-hmm. interesting. So, like I said, we hear this fake accent on Sebastian. So, where are you from? How'd you get into this?
I'm from London. my family is kind of more European, though. Mm-hmm. We're kind of...
based on your last name, it sounds
exactly.
Italian or something. I'm not sure what it is.
So, everyone says Spanish.
Spanish
I don't quite know exactly where it comes from. I mean, a lot of Polish people have that last name.
Okay.
And my grandparents are Polish, and mm-hmm. they came during the war, they came as refugees to England.
Right.
And then they had my parents who are also... both born in London,
mm-hmm.
and now my father moved back to Poland. Or moved to Poland. My mother lives in France and in Spain.
Okay.
So my granddad, so kind of really international family. But me and my sisters live in London,
mm-hmm.
and I've lived there since I was at boarding school. So like 12, well younger maybe like 10.
Mm-hmm. Where are you at?
Right now I'm in London.
Mm-hmm.
Where in London?
In the city?
In Chiswick.
Chiswick.
Yeah,
okay.
That's
city,
nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Chiswick. Yeah, it's called West End. Yeah. It's quite nice. Quite a lot of filmmaker people live around there.
And you say you have more of a middle class accent to me, but not exactly a working class chap over here.
Well, my parents grew up in Ealing, and they, I think I must have inherited the accent from them. But they, and so I actually came to LA. Oh, so I went to film school in Poland for a year, and I also got some. I also worked for a director for a couple mm-hmm. of movies as well there, because it was like a friend.
What director?
My dad. It's a man called Jacek Bromski. as a Polish director. Mm-hmm. That was probably my first step into the film world, and I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I just graduated.
What was the film school? I'm just curious.
It was a new film school in Warsaw called Warszawa Szkoła Filmowa.
Okay, so because I think there's a
I know, that was pretty though. I know, I was like,
well, see, people,
say it again, say it again. Yeah. Now say it with a sexy voice.
Well, see, it's funny because like people think that Poland, because it's between Germany and Russia, it's going to have like a harder sound, but it doesn't, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that was a lot more sexier than the German accent.
Yeah. Where's that? Is it in Lots? There's Łódź,
which is much more famous. That's not the one I went to. That's like further away. But a lot of famous cinematographers go there and filmmakers. Okay. But I was there for a year. And then I went to a film school in London, the Met Film School, around Ealing Studios. Mm-hmm. That's where it is. I actually managed to get an internship here at Universal Studios there for like a few months, which was like incredible. You know, that was also my first experience in LA. So that was awesome. I got like,
you're like, look at this weather.
Yeah, I know. I got a convertible and everything. Did you?
He's got a convertible
He's had the top up
for the past 4 days.
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah, know.
He's like, who cares if it's raining?
Yeah, right? I know, yeah.
It's not my car. I don't care if it gets wet.
That's right. And then when I'm back to London after that, I kind of started from scratch. So I like worked in short films and low budget features, and I finally someone basically recommended me to a Nicole Kidman film.
Who is that? I don't know.
Oh, yes,
Nicole.
Has she done anything?
I felt like incredible. Like I couldn't believe when I heard it. Like my friend had this connection, so I just worked as a rushes runner. So I was there doing film. You know, so basically took all the film reels to. Pinewood Studios, development basically. And I did that for like a couple of months.
Mm-hmm. What film?
It was called, I can't remember now.
Sebastian.
I do that all the time.
I can always say it, but now obviously I'm on the spot.
Was it The Hours?
No. It was,
it's in your bio. Hold on.
I'll remember in a minute. But then after that, Before I Go to Sleep, that's what it was called.
Okay. I don't remember that.
And then
oh, with Mark Strong.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, told you he's right. Was
that's impressive.
Yeah. Told you.
He does not have a computer or a phone in front of him. that's
there you go. Hold on.
Mark Strong and the guy from God, what is his name? He was in he was in The King's Speech. This guy was in The King's Speech.
And then after that, I went on to a movie called The Imitation Game, where I ended up assisting the producers.
Awesome movie. Oh, really? And cool. What was that like?
It was unbelievable. I managed to get onto it. I made friends with one of the producers, who I'm still friends with, a man called Peter Heslop, who did The King's Speech and Imitation.
I love how they say a man called like a sexy assumption.
And also I managed to speak to Graham Moore, who ended up winning the Oscar for that movie, and he sort of tutored me a little bit because I sent him this like.
Were you writing at the time? By the way,
I started writing. I just finished film school, and I realized I really enjoyed writing.
Okay.
And it's something I used to do when I was a lot younger. Like we had like in English we had creative writing, not a course, but like part of the curriculum was creative writing. And then when I finished that, they we never introduced it, so I never realized that's what they should teach stuff like that.
Right.
Able to do it, I think. But the when I went to film school, I realized that I really enjoyed doing that, and I started writing more. And then I think. When I saw Graham, I think I sent him like a 160-page script, which I co-written or something. And looking back on it, it was quite humiliating. But he was really sweet, really nice. He sent me a really long email, gave me loads of notes, and basically just started telling me this
Betty
is
gave how
you
gave
you notes.
Yeah,
he did.
Also notes and screenwriting in general, saying that this is how you format a script, and these are the kind of things you need to be aware of. And then
I just want to say, usually people are like, okay, when you get this down to like 110 or 115. machine, send it back to me. Because that's what I would do. I'm just going to be all of it.
Yeah.
I ain't got no time.
Yeah.
I ain't got no time.
I mean,
I appreciate it.
I don't know if I would read a script.
That's awesome.
A published script, okay. But
yeah. No, I couldn't believe he did that's it. Awesome. But it's just a testament to what this guy was.
That's the cool thing about being young and naive. You don't know, so you just do things. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's how I got my first script to Sundance. I had no idea what that even was. I just submitted it. Right. You know, so yeah. Go ahead.
And I was noticing when I was doing all this, you know, working on these movies, is I was obviously learning how it all works, right. And it's basically physical production and stuff like that. But also, I got to meet and make friends with a lot of cool people. Mm-hmm. And so I just continued to do that and continue to write. you know, when I wasn't working, or, you know, occasionally when I was working, when mm-hmm. I had time. And I just was doing that for years. And I guess my, you know, my craft has got a bit better.
Mm-hmm. Would you say all your set time has helped you with writing screenplays, in the sense of, because one of the things that a lot of younger writers, and you could talk about this too, Jenny, one of the things that a lot of younger writers have a problem with is not understanding what the budget would be. Mm-hmm. So they just write. But it's also a hindrance when you know, because you try to pull back so that it doesn't be too crazy with what you think the budget is too, because you have an idea of what it would be.
Yeah, yeah. No, so, I mean, so basically I kind of think like a producer sometimes, because mm-hmm. I worked for quite a few producers, right. And I just and I do suddenly think, oh, could I contain this in one scene or inside, and it's not raining or something like that, you know? Exactly. And sometimes limitations.
Not at night. We don't want to do it at night.
Unless it's inside, then it's fine. Right. But sometimes those limitations can make you more creative. Right. I think.
I agree. You
know? They totally do. I think that's the thing. People who, someone was reading this the other day. This is going to be in that note sheet. The mm-hmm. pearls of wisdom. It's like limitations in art force you to focus, because if you just, you know, it's kind of like if in school and the teacher says, do whatever you want on this, and you're like, god damn, so what way do I go? And you're like, hey, so you know what, stay in this lane, but these are the parameters. I mean, you know, there's some people who would tell you, don't worry about budget. Don't worry about like writing, that kind of stuff when you're writing. And mm-hmm. I always think that's like bad advice, because, you know, if you sit around and write some script that's now some $200 million, and unless you're, you know, like, I mean, to have that movie get considered seriously, you have to have actually sold a movie or two.
No,
because
I have told writers to don't worry about it after I've already read some of their pages. And I could tell they needed more. So I'd be like, just write it. We'll pull it back on the next version. Just write it. Because they're not, I could tell they're holding back.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's when I usually encourage somebody to.
Yeah, I guess like it's a bit kind of counterintuitive for a writer too. I mean, I've tried to diversify as much of my work mm-hmm. as I can, because I don't know what's going to hit. So it's different, you know, all over genres and things. But I met a producer called Aditya Sood, who is a president of Genre Films. And he gave me some really good feedback to say, because I was asking him some advice. And
he's at Fox.
Is he?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And he said to me, don't try and follow the market. Don't try and, you know, go backwards that way. Mm-hmm. Just write what comes from inside, what you really like enjoying, what you, mm-hmm. maybe perhaps even what you know about, but just something that really, you know, that you're really going to enjoy writing and seeing as a movie. And as a consequence, I did end up writing a couple of things like that. And one of them was Folklore, which I won the award for. And, you know, and I tried not to think about anything, you know, other than what I wanted to see.
What you wanted to see?
Yeah.
How many scripts have you written? And then let's tell everybody about Folklore and what it is, what it's about and stuff.
How many have written? Quite a few. I don't really know exactly. But
over 10? Over 10?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
good. That's important, because people are going to go, oh, well, how did he win this script? Oh, he's from England. How come he won? You know, they're going to play all that bullshit game, which you can get into, Jen.
I'm going to pop in on that one for a sec.
Go ahead.
This is one of the things that's also important about Finish Line, is that it is an international competition. Mm-hmm. So we have, first of all, we got people from 26 countries last year.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, and including, you know, Russia and Poland and places like that. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's really, and some of our mentors are in, like, before Sebastian came to LA to meet his mentors, he had like 5 people to meet in London.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so awesome. He, cool. you know, was lucky enough that he was mm-hmm. in London and was able to do that. And
so that's good to know, because I envisioned everybody was here when he was here, but okay,
And then we have someone in Canada who I've sent some material to mm-hmm. from people who, you know, placed, not didn't win, but mm-hmm. were a quarter finalist or semi finalist, and in Australia. So if you're mm-hmm. an English speaking writer, right. in an English writing writer, and right. you're writing English well, there's a difference. Some people right. send stuff in, right. it's like,
oh yeah,
this is English, but I'm not sure. Then you have a chance of winning. It's about the script. So
awesome.
he met five people before he got out here.
Okay.
And now he's meeting, you know, about, I don't know how many more, 28 more, right. 26, right. 27. Mm-hmm. But also I remember something that you said to me, which was that, because you also started working for writers in a writer's room.
Recently,
I'm not going to get yeah. into the details, that you can say what you want, but, yeah. and I remember you saying that you learned a lot from sitting in there thinking about how you were going to rewrite
mm-hmm.
yeah.
as you were you were taking notes for the writers in the writer's room yeah. on the movie
it's
that
about,
you had
it's
done.
It's about the same time I was resubmitting, actually,
yeah,
for the competition.
That's right. I remember that well, because I was like, that's awesome.
That's,
I mean,
interesting.
That's how it, you know. No, it's just to hear how people, you know, that you were like in there working and thinking about your script and how it would, mm-hmm. you know, what they were saying was going to help you find mm-hmm. the way to prop it up more right. and find different ways.
And that's why, and keep your thought, Chris, that's why I love what you do with your script, with your competition, in the sense that, you know, you get your notes and then you can go back, or even what you did where you submitted and you discovered later you could get the notes. What it does is, sometimes you'll be watching a movie 2 months later
yep.
and you'll get all these new ideas for different moments in your script.
That's right.
So you'll go back and punch it up.
Yeah, life.
But if you can't resubmit,
you
got this better version of a script that's
yeah.
just sitting there.
Yeah, and then
you know
have to
mean?
Pay again.
Right.
Right.
Go ahead, Chris. What were you saying?
Well, I was, you know, I think it's, I'm going to say two things on that. Like, one is, I think it's really interesting because a lot of times when you're in those environments where, you know, they're like the writer's room, like the writers are there. Like, they're still struggling too with craft. They just have, you know, like at a certain level, because they're all sitting there talking and throwing out ideas, and some stuff works. I mean, you saw that some stuff works, some stuff doesn't. You know, they're like, you're always trying to figure it out. It's not it's not like the writer's room is this.
That's why they call it breaking story.
Yeah, it's not this bastion of guys right. who are just like, oh, where's the great piece for here, here and here. No, it's like being like, you know, it's thrown to the ground and torn up, and whatever survives. That you know it's like it's like a rugby match. Whatever survives mm-hmm. it like is what goes in the script. And it's interesting because you see how people kind of like, you know, like they're wrestling through craft and theme and dialogue and what works, and they also a lot of times in the writer's room, which is interesting, particularly in TV, is that, you know, they're sitting and they're writing and then the guy from production will call and go, yeah, you got those three scenes?
Oh, yeah.
You got to do those in one scene.
That happened on our show.
Because we can't afford to run you around. Right. So
we wrote almost an entire episode. I don't know what you said. We wrote almost an entire episode. They were like, we had to do the bottle episode. You know that, right? We're like, what
the hell?
We had all these exterior scenes. So anyway, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
But Sebastian was in, I mean, do you want to? I don't want. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead,
Chris. I just wanted to.
Oh, I just.
No, go ahead. No, I just wanted. You know, like he was working in film,
mm-hmm.
and sort of. If I don't know if you mm-hmm. can talk about what a lot of it is. Hush, hush. But
yes.
Some
all right.
Of it
well,
is,
I can say.
I understand.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
You can be generic about it, though. It's no problem.
Yeah. Well, no, I did. I was working on Spider-Man: Far From Home.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially. And you know, and that was like a really surreal experience mm-hmm. because we had you know, kind of writer's room sessions
mm-hmm.
And I was just this sort of insignificant English guy just taking notes, listening, you know, so all this, you know, all this stuff, and it's just, you know, just fascinating. I kind of learned a hell of a lot through it.
Oh, yeah.
Also, can I just interject something?
Mm-hmm.
That what Sebastian has said about like how he went to film school and then he mm-hmm. did short films and he just met people and he sent them their script and he was nice and they liked him. That's mm-hmm. how it works, peeps.
Totally.
That's how it happens. Mm-hmm. And then he got into a writer's room for, you know, the British shooting part of
right.
Spider-Man.
I just realized now, like, it's called Far From Home because I saw part of the show, but I didn't want to watch enough of it. This is the part of it takes place in England. Is that where it takes some of it? Well, dude, you don't need to say. I mean, it's obviously Far From Home, so it's not in Brooklyn. It's all in Brooklyn. We know that.
Not far from your home.
Yeah, from the title.
I don't think it's a secret.
It should be called Three Hours Away.
It's not a secret anymore.
Because I think the thing that I didn't know until I saw some behind this. This is so tangent. Behind the scenes on Infinity War, the kid who plays Spider-Man is from England.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I was like, what?
Dude, they're killing it.
Oh, my
they're
God. Killing he's killing it. Yeah. He's killing it.
But I mean, that's how it works. I mean, not everybody's in a writer's room who becomes obviously a writer or who wins this competition. I mean, that's just, but that's the path that, you know, got him into and learning. So that, I mean, that's what we always try and, when people are like, how do I get in? Well, everybody
there's
has
no
their,
real
there
way.
There is no way. This there's is what no happened for him. Way. He went to Polish film school, for God's sake. I don't know.
And I also kind of realized that, other writer's room experience I've had is at film school. Mm-hmm. I kind of
How did that job come to you? Can you talk about that at least?
I don't think it wasn't that interesting. I think a friend of mine who's a coordinator on the movie.
So you knew somebody who knew somebody.
That's how I've always got my jobs. Right. And somebody knows somebody. Knows
that's usually how it works.
Yeah.
and being friendly, you know, that's kind of helps a lot. And working hard. Those are the two things I'd always say if you want to try and.
Yes, which is being generous with your time and who you are, because it costs you nothing to be friendly.
And it costs you nothing to ask for what you want for.
Yeah.
You probably let them know, hey, if something comes up, let me know, right?
Yeah.
Of course.
And it earns you a lot. It just, to be friendly, it earns you a lot because people are like, okay, so I can, I can feel good about recommending you. Because that's the thing I think people don't realize is that people will recommend you if they feel comfortable about that, because it might seem like it's really easy for them to do. And it is easy for them to do. But they'll only do it if they feel comfortable spending that capital that they've earned. And they're not going to do it if they're like, yeah, I think you're cool and you're smart, but you're still kind of a dick in a certain ways. And if I recommend you, then it's going to look bad on me. Mm-hmm. And that's and that's the good thing about, like I said, it costs you nothing to be friendly.
And also just on the tail end of that is when because I was sending out a thank you to the mentors that Sebastian's already met this past week. And I was like, these are all really nice people. I mean, there's a lot of people that aren't nice that I could also check in with and say, could you, meet with Sebastian? Or, could you be one of our mentors? And it's like, that might not be a good thing, I mean, it's like, why do that to somebody? And at the very least, you'll have a nice experience, whether they you under their wing.
You'd be better off sending them to one person than the six people that suck.
Yeah, exactly. I said that to you. Well, I don't know what's going to happen with this meeting, but they're nice. And that's,
sometimes it's just about establishing relationships. Just because you went, and you got to know this, just because you go into a meeting and nothing comes out of it doesn't mean nothing came out
of it. That's what I've been telling him.
Remember, they read your script, so they know what you can do. Yeah. You go in and you sell yourself and what else you can do, hopefully. And then you walk out of there with you on their mind.
Yeah.
And they're in the middle of something and somebody walks in the door and goes, hey, we just brought this new project, this new book, whatever. Who do you think would be great? Do you think John August can we afford him? They always go to him.
Yeah, right.
You think he could afford him? Like, well, shit, dude, we can get this other. We just had the guy who came in.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Who just wrote this thing called Folklore. Yeah. That's how it works.
A tenth of the price, too. So let's get him.
We can get him for scale plus 10.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because that's the thing that, the thing about meetings is that people are going to read your script. And they're not going to agree to take the meeting if they don't like the script.
No.
These people actually have to do that.
Understood.
To be honest. Yeah. Like, these mentors are there regardless of who the winner is.
Right.
So they might be in line with the kind of material that he's writing, or they might not be. But that's only part of what, said and what you're saying, is that's only part of what they give is, totally. I'm going to take this and I'm going to make it. Mm-hmm. This isn't for me, but I do know who will like it.
Exactly. And you can't be afraid to ask that. Right. People don't know that you can say, hey, do you have anybody you think would be great for this? I'll do it in a fucking heartbeat.
Because if someone says it's not for me, it's, you know, like, what I mean? I again, it's like, to me, I think, the benefit that you have from coming from her competition is they know the writing is going to be good based on Jenny's reputation. Right. And so then they're going to say, hey, let's just read this. And if the writing is really strong and you go for the meeting and you sell yourself the right way, then they're going to say, oh, where else can this guy go? Or where else can this girl go? Because, you know, I might read something and say, you know what? I can't do a script like this because I got something like this that I've done, or I tried to do something like this before and I got whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But this guy's writing is so good.
I just had a kid come in the other day and he pitched me this really interesting project that wasn't for me in my wheelhouse. So I connected him to Lena.
Yeah.
I was like, this is Lena Waithe all day. You know what I mean? You need to call her.
A gift.
You know what I mean? Jeez. I was like, go to Lena. Here's information. Here's which I'll refer you, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it's totally her. And he actually made a sizzle for it and looks kind of good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, this is all day. You got this. So we'll see what happens.
I think what's really important as well, and when you meet these people like this, is that you have something to follow up with, you know? And that's why I've got like another script that... you also read
Virus,
and so that's so basically when someone says, well, what else have you got,
right?
You know, you can, you know, give something that, you know, has been vetted essentially.
Well, what is folklore about? Let's tell the kids.
So it's,
and how did it come about and all that other stuff too?
Well, it's set in 18th century America
when I was born. I'm a vampire. What jump?
Wow!
That's how I stay pretty.
The country's inhabited by mythological creatures from Europe mostly, who basically emigrated there after following, you know, human sort of oppression and expansion. They're trying to escape them, so they probably moved there like in the 13th century or something, and now humanity is starting to colonize America, and so they're encroaching on their territory again, and that's causing all sorts of difficulties for locals who are also disbelieved. You know,
speaking to the time subliminally.
Yeah, it's true.
You know what I mean?
It's true.
Like if you go into the forest and destroy it, you fucking some shit up.
Well, it's that kind of an allegory for, you know, exactly, kind of stuff that we brought over there, like sort of diseases or like you know, and also I want to in the show, I want to kind of reflect the kind of sort of genocide and you know, sort of slavery and everything else introduced at that time. It's pretty horrific. But basically the show follows a devout Spanish priest who's been sent to the America to investigate mysterious disappearances of priests and mysterious occurrences. Okay. And he runs into a French woman who escaped from France, who is basically a supernatural huntress, and she's persecuted for being a witch, but that's not really what she is. And she sort of got these abilities or these powers after being sort of resurrected as a baby in France. And they kind of, you know, meet each other in the pilot, and they don't really see eye to eye, but they kind of need each other. Mm-hmm. And for the whole show, that's kind of, you know, that she's actually looking for her long lost son, but she needs him to help him. Right. She needs him to help her to escape all the, you know, the witch hunters and, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And he's kind of trying to redeem himself from something he did wrong in Spain, or some failure.
What he did.
That's
episode 7.
I'm right.
I'm not letting you know.
But the cool thing about it is that he's basically essentially a charlatan. He's pretending to exorcise demons and things, and she's in fact doing
really
everything.
Doing it. Right.
She's doing everything, right. She's kind of his mentor. She's trying to he's trying to learn as much as he can from her.
What also is really interesting about it is that in each episode, or not maybe not each, but in, you know, certain arcs, you meet new creatures that are affecting villages and that they have to overcome. Mm-hmm. And one of them may be from Scandinavia. Yeah. And these are real, this is real folklore bringing in.
Exactly. These kinds of the myths have gone very popular. There's not a lot of shows, mm-hmm. you know, successful shows of them about them. But I'm trying to sort of detract or go away from that a bit and go for sort of myths that we haven't quite heard of. Right. So in Pilot, we explore something called a Myling, which is like a creature from Icelandic mythology, which basically occurred. I think the myth is that when women would have children out of wedlock, they'd abandon them near lakes, and the child would sort of deteriorate into some kind of entity that would sort of climb trees and jump on people and kill them. But essentially, all it wanted to do was be taken back to its mother. Mm. So you know, that's kind of the entity.
See,
whole mix of mystery and supernatural and drama and everything.
See, I always like that stuff. I mean, I think that those kind of worlds are interesting because I feel like it's one of the things about. It's one of the things about American Gods. I don't know if you've read the book American Gods. Have you read the book?
I haven't read the book. I saw the show.
But it's like the show. I mean, there's a hint of that in that, which I thought was such a smart idea. It's a smart idea you're doing too. Is that it's like the gods from the old world. They don't disappear just because the people stop worshiping them. And I feel that that's kind of like interesting take into what you're saying. These people, these gods from the old world have left and come here. I don't know. Like, I remember I read like the first 10 or 15 pages of it. And I think the atmosphere is so strong. And I feel like there was a movie. I think it was called The Witch from like 3 or 4 years ago. And it like, and I just like felt that. Because that's the only thing I can remember that's of this world in terms of like the atmosphere and the time and the craziness. It just felt really strong on the page. And I was like, oh, I totally see this. And even though like I've...
Visual, very visual.
Yeah, like we've seen stuff like, it's like colonial America or the pre-colonial, around that time. Just ended that turn. But this is like a whole different world than Turn. And it feels like
Well, Turn is in America.
This is a little before. And then it also has that element. It feels like what's that movie with DiCaprio, The Revenant? Where it's got that. I mean, it just felt palpable like that, like reading on the page, those images came to mind to me immediately.
That's
a compliment.
That's a great compliment. And also, he did. I don't know if you saw the.
The pitch deck. Yeah, it's dope.
Pitch deck was dope.
Did you make that? The deck.
Pitch presentation.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
How did you learn how to do it? You do graphics and stuff, or what?
I've had to do I didn't at all. I've had to do stuff like that, sort of at work once or twice, but. I don't know, like, I just something, and maybe I'm quite visual.
It looked like something he would do.
That pitch deck is really impressive.
Well,
the hardest thing is
to get that to reflect on the when you're writing, you know, when you don't have images. And I tried, I don't know if I succeeded, but I tried to.
I think you did it.
I think so.
I think you did it.
Yeah. I thought it was really strong.
We didn't see the pitch deck before we saw the script, obviously, and then the pitch deck came out after he won, and I was like,
Was I kind of like this kind of magical realism that I was basically trying to find a balance between reality and non-reality. I think do you ever watch a film called Pan's Labyrinth?
Love it.
That's
Guillermo del Toro.
That's just Labyrinth.
Labyrinth.
That's just Labyrinth.
I knew it was something with a labyrinth in it. Same thing.
Guillermo del Toro's
masterpiece.
That's his masterpiece. Yeah. It's ultimately his masterpiece. Yeah. And it's one of the best, it's easily one of the best like fantasy type films. Yeah. It's maybe.
But tonally, it's quite dark and a little gritty.
Very dark. Very dark. It's,
it's a serious subject.
That's what I love about it, because it's not this happy story. And he's got that very eerie, fable-esque music. Yeah. That's not. It feels like it's like from a music box, but it's creepy. Dangerous. I would want to see Del Toro do something like that again, but I know that movie almost killed him. So he talks about it. I think he said in the one of the things. I think he lost like 50 pounds making that movie, just making the movie.
Wow.
The stress of filming that. Yeah. And people know Del Toro. He's kind of a big guy.
Yeah.
Right. And to lose that much weight.
It's not like he needed to.
I'm glad you said it. Yeah.
I'm not saying you shouldn't.
I'm
not saying you shouldn't, but you know it's to go on a diet is one thing on your choice, but to have the stress of a film shoot, you know, make you.
That's a negative way to lose weight.
Yeah.
Well, folklore is dark, but it's funny. It's got humor. Yeah. It's you know, it's got the character, you know, relationship, all these you know new monsters and. Mm-hmm. Creatures
see,
to coming
to me. Oh, that's what I want to say. That's what I love about is the monsters. Is the fact that you're saying the monsters are like, you know, the thing. That's what I'm saying about these old legends, these old gods, these you know these pagan rituals, and particularly throughout Europe. I mean, just everywhere. There's all this stuff that we've that has kind of been just forgotten about, stamped out because of Christianity's rise. But those things they're just there for people to tap into.
Yeah, and there are lots of them, you know. And they're kind of like, I kind of find them interesting because they act as metaphors of our, you know, the human condition and our past, and they reflect human history and things we had to, you know, things that we've been taught, you know, as children, you know, to watch that or don't do that or something like that. So I used to read Greek myths when I was really young and find those fascinating. And then I, develop that fascination but also really enjoy history.
Mm-hmm,
so I basically married those two and tried to make, when I've written, I tried to make it not historically accurate, because I know it's fictional, but historically truthful in a way, as much as I can.
I love that because I was having a discussion with some guys on Twitter last night, and I think Chris McCrary was like, oh, I'm going to watch Untouchables tonight. Mm-hmm. Everyone was like, oh, this movie's so great. And they were like, yeah, it doesn't really follow what happened about the Prohibition, but it's so good, it's so fun, it doesn't matter, you know. And I kind of feel like that's the case with all historical stuff. Essentially, is it fun?
Yeah, but what I would say to that, as somebody who gets stuck writing a lot of historical things,
Well,
I don't want to say it in a negative way. I don't mean in a negative way. Just meaning I read a lot of historical things.
Yeah,
and I'm doing two of them in a row right now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's inspired by something.
Right, of course.
So what you want to do is you want people to feel like the world is there. You see the cars, you see the horses, whatever, the way that they dress, you see the way
the atmosphere is right. You got to get
all
that atmosphere, yeah.
But what really happened at the time wasn't what really happened, because you're making a movie or you're making a TV show. Right. So you have to up the ante, you know, on some of the things that happened. So for me, I always forgive those things because I know you had to. Yeah. You know, and you weren't there. So you didn't have the conversation. You have to make up those conversations. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, there's that, but there's also these little things that I think people aren't generally aware of what really happened in a lot of places. I remember I was reading this book. I can't remember the name of the book now, but it was about something about inventions. And it was like, I think the first sound recording ever was like around 1810 or 1812 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like 100 years before radio and all this kind of stuff. Like these guys in France had recorded sound on copper wire, you know, around the time of Napoleon.
Yeah, you remember this, don't you?
You know, and I'm
not that old.
I was talking about this with somebody just the other day. My 11-year-old. No.
Oh,
you know, and I was reading it and I was like, that could be cool in a story, in a movie, where someone recorded something back then before anyone knew that was like really the device, because it was like inventors were creating stuff, and it's like the inventions we have is usually because, I remember someone was saying, it's somebody in the book that it's like, you know, there's an invention we might have, like the typewriter or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like 50 guys who are trying to do something, trying to create some sort of typewriter-esque machine that didn't work. And then someone had seen all the kind of prototypes and failed stuff and was like, oh, if they did this and they did this and they did this with my idea, I can make, you know, the final thing that we now know is a typewriter. And it might take 20, 30, 40 years.
But they didn't have patents back then.
You know, it might take 20, 30, 40, 50 years before you get to the final device. So that's why when you write these historical things, you can kind of like push things in certain ways because someone was developing technology somewhere, sometime. Right. Which is always makes a story interesting, you know, because it's just, oh, I didn't know that's how people did stuff, you know.
And sometimes I think it's about, you might be in a story where the focus is usually focused on Robin Hood, but you never go home with the right hand man, Friar, what's her fucking name? You know what I mean?
Friar Tuck.
Friar Tuck.
Exactly.
Right.
That's what I said.
Yeah. I don't know what fucking name. Friar Tuck, Chris. Jeez.
Y'all don't hear me? Do I have to rewind this back? But so it's the point of view. You know, now the point of view of him would change if you go back and see his life and how he became the best man to the best man, the best friend, the best mate to that.
Yeah.
Shut up, Jen.
Anyway, let's talk about your time here in Los Angeles, Sebastian.
Yeah, so.
It must have felt like old home week with all the rain, right?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, I felt like such an idiot with that convertible. You know, I really, in fact, there was.
Did
like
you really have the top down?
No, there was a 15 minute window, I think, last week where I managed to put it down.
This is not what I heard. Yeah.
This is London again. What is going on? Where's the fog?
Yeah, it's worse than London. Yeah, really, this city isn't built for this kind of rain.
Right. You know,
huge puddles. I almost drowned.
I'm sending him to the valley to Santa Monica and back. He's got a nice car.
So I want to ask you two things. Mm-hmm. So where were you and what was it like for you when you did you get the call? Did you get the email that you won? And what's it been like for you being here, going on the meetings? So you had some meetings back at home.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you prepare for them? Like all that.
So Jenny called me one evening and asked me a few questions. Mm-hmm. I wasn't quite sure why. And she said he won the competition.
And I was she was like, trying to distract you.
Yeah. And I was, euphoric. You know, I couldn't quite believe it. And
do you have a film winner and a TV winner? Or is it just,
no, just
TV?
It's both.
Just is it whoever gets the best script?
Whoever gets the best script, yeah. That's at the moment. Yeah. That's
and I wasn't expecting, that's the thing, you know, it's healthy not to expect anything from these.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, hope for the best, expect the worst. That's what I'm doing here too. Right. And so, you know, that. So I just, so then we pretty much got to work immediately and started, you know, talking about how to improve the script a bit more. Mm-hmm. And Jane wanted to read all my other stuff and other pitches. And, you know, I just went, you know, straight to it, prepared for the meetings in England, mm-hmm. which went really well, mm-hmm. And I kind of used them as to practice for when I come here, and then and the funny thing is also when I also know because of the movies I've worked on, I know people here as well, you know, also quite important people, and they when I mentioned to them. You know, that I won this. They were very, you know, very supportive, and congratulating me, and mm-hmm. you know, trying to help me in whatever way they can. Mm-hmm. I got to meet even more people than even what Jenny was setting up. So coming here has, you know, been. I mean, I've adjusted. You know, adjusted pretty quick, and I kind of didn't know what to expect, all the you know over here, like what the meetings would be like. But everyone's just again being very friendly. I don't have any bad stories or anything, and it's kind of just it's a bit disconcerting because you don't know what might happen next. Right. You know, like you know, are they going to call me? Are they going to you know do they want to represent me or make it? I don't know.
I think the thing is, number one, you have Jenny, you know, a former manager at one of the, you know, very respected boutique companies and several other places, you know. And so you have a name behind you who vetted you, right? And that is the first gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, completely.
You know what I mean?
Completely.
So people are like, oh, it came from Jenny. Okay, cool. So if she said it's good, it's probably pretty good. So let me take a look, right? So that's the start.
Right.
Then the next thing is them going, let me see him, right? Now, I'm just generalizing, not outside of the, even outside of the company.
Yeah.
So the other thing is that you run into your friends and you go, oh, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. So now they're like, you didn't just come to LA with nothing.
Yeah.
You came with ammunition.
Yeah.
Right? You came with something behind you.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's the other thing. I always tell a lot of young writers, you know, they're like, well, should I submit to these competitions? I'm like, pick the ones that you feel move you, you know? There are some that people think are better than others, and that's here or there to me. Because to me, all you need is one good. All he needs to do is to sell his pilot and go whatever, and then your competition will become awesome, just like that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's just one thing. Mm. And so for me, because when I first came up, I was doing a lot of the competitions too, and I'd win some, I'd play some, whatever. And so I get it. What it was for me was all about where am I? So let me put this one out. Let's see where it is in Austin and see where I am. Okay, I'm a finalist. Okay, that's pretty good. It still needs a little more work, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But there was, where are the notes? Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. I had to figure it out
how
myself.
Do you do it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so So you have to have your reasons behind everything that you do. And when you start going on all these meetings, and you have, you have to go with a clear mind of, let me get into their room, show them who I am, and show them I'm more than that, yeah. that they read. People don't know how to do that. It's a little bit of an art. Yeah, yeah. But you just start talking about your friends, just slight little sidestep. So I had a pitch meeting. Well, I had a meeting with a really big company before Christmas, me and my producing partner, Pamela. And we go in. They read my Black Wall Street script. Mm-hmm. And we came in, and we were talking to them about what we're going to do with this and this. And they love the script and this and this. But it wasn't under their mandate, mm-hmm. right? But they started going, well, you know, maybe there's something else we could do, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So I started to proceed to tell them my story, you know, growing up in a hood and the youngest of five and a military kid and being the young black gay kid, you know, in the punk rock scene. And all of a sudden they were just like, really? Like, huh, really? Like, well, you know, we have this other
interesting
script.
Person. Yeah.
We just so happened to be looking for a writer for this particular script. And I was like, really? So they started telling me, and I was like, yeah. I can write that in my sleep.
Yeah.
Right. And then we went back and pitched, you know, like literally. So it's about shifting to let them know you're more than the thing that you brought in.
Yeah.
You know,
and so that's a lot of what we worked on to get when, you know, when he.
Yeah. And that's why I came here as well.
Right. Yeah.
Because I thought way, way, way better than just, you know, giving a phone call, you know.
Yeah. And like getting in the room and knowing people let you know fairly quickly whether this is their thing or not, you know, and then it's up to you to sell yourself. And it's about knowing your material.
Right.
That's it. You know, it's like when you go in for a pitch, it's about just knowing it back and forward and having the answers that they might ask questions about and all
and,
that
and
stuff.
About and knowing what type about, of writer you are. A lot of people, because it sounds like you have a little bit of what I have and Chris has a little bit, where we could write just about anything. But
TV,
within that, there's genre. A style in how I write. So I'll tell people when I tell them being a young black gay kid, you know, and all this, I say I'm attracted to underdog stories, but they're in that murder, death, kill world and crime. So you get, so that means I can handle all those different type of, you could put me in the middle of a crime show. You could put me on a horror show. You could put me on, you get it based on where I am.
Yeah.
So make sure you have that little line of pitch to tell them the type of writer you are too.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's important. Okay.
I also found like I've never done so many interviews and like so little time so quickly you know, for anything.
And you're going to be adjusting.
And, yeah,
you know,
and, but what I found interesting is that some people you really you can really hit it off with, you know, and you can talk about nothing for like over an hour, or you know, just you know, it's, sort of conversations or moves organically. But but some people you just don't, you know, they're, as I said, everyone's been perfectly nice and helpful, but just you just don't click, and you can even feel a bit disheartened afterwards, And, you know, I can imagine if I only had those two meetings, I'd be feeling really bad. But it's just, it sometimes just depends on who you're meeting, you know.
It's like dating.
Yeah,
exactly. It's true. It's so very, true. Yeah. It is.
Unfortunately. Oh,
I thought this was going to be cool. I guess it's not. Yeah.
But you never, I mean, the thing is, of course, is and one of the great things about, you know, this competition or other competitions where you meet industry people is that you've met them and maybe you don't click at this time, but, you know, maybe you will later, or maybe the material's right, or maybe you click with the assistant, and we all know how important assistants are, and, you know, all of that stuff. So I always say, not every meeting makes you feel like you've left, like, walking on air, like your future is solid in Hollywood, I'm moving here next week type of thing, but it's a process, like you said, like it happens next year, or it happens, with the next project, or
but here's
where that person leaves and goes to another company, and, you know, they were unhappy there, and that's why they didn't click with you. Or
I was going to get to that, sometimes you don't know what just happened a minute ago before you got there, you know.
Well,
let me finish my thought, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Is it reminds me of at the end of our run on the TV show, I was on this show called Deadly Class, right? We just came out on Wednesday. Yeah. Shout out to everybody. And so I'm not telling any politics in the room. I'm just telling a general story. So we all went and met just all the writers, and we just like went to go have drinks and stuff like the night before the room was over, right? Mm-hmm. And at some point, we all were talking about how there were moments where we all thought we did something wrong in the room, right? And we're going to be fired, every one of us, right? And so what we learned, the reason why I'm tying this in is sometimes your impression on what you do goes right over somebody's head. They didn't even notice it. Yeah. And like I would tell somebody, oh my God, remember when I did that thing? You're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then they would tell me, and we're like, what are you talking about? They're like, it was that big moment when this happened. I was like, girl, I don't even remember what the hell you're talking about. You know what I mean? So because there's so much stuff going on,
yeah,
I'm aware of him. Yeah. If he wasn't here, I wouldn't be doing as much. He's just sitting over there.
Okay.
And so, so just know that you can't personalize why this was good or why this was bad. All you could do is be you, you know, and you is the nice guy coming with energy. And people are already going to be infatuated with the fact that he's British.
Yeah.
That's going to grab you. It's going to grab him.
Yeah, of course.
People are like, oh, is that brother? What part of England are you from? Oh, well, yeah. Like that accent. I mean, they just can't help it. It's so unique.
Yeah.
So roll with that. Yeah. You know, tell them stories about growing up, you know, where you're from.
Yeah.
Tell them about how you came from this place to that place.
And speaking of Polish, and then you get some people excited. They're like, oh, really?
That's why,
tell them if you speak other languages. I mean, all that stuff.
Yeah, and I was, as I was saying before we went on the air, was that, you know, I give him notes on who he's meeting and if there's something specific about them that he should know and like a way in or, you know, what they've done and where they were before, and you never know where your connection is gonna be, whether you have that, and you have
and
to get
make
in
sure
that
you
room
look them up yourself too.
Yeah, well, he's done. You know? Yeah, you got. He's done a lot of
right. There might be research. A connection. There might be a 6 degrees of somebody you work with back in England. You know, so
yeah, it's true. And by the way, and you were saying, you know, all you need is one person to sell a script. Last year's winner has been optioned.
Oh, good.
So, it's actually optioned a couple times.
We've been through that, haven't we, Chris?
Yeah, that was in a good way. But this was in a good way. But really, you know, like great people, and so that's happening. So it is happening, you know, and it's happening in here and in England and in Canada and stuff like that. So it is, you know, it takes time for things to start.
And this is only 4 years in.
4 years.
Like, 4 years in, the winner gets 35 freaking, you know, meetings is not even just in America.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, to me, I think.
And they're major, they're real, you know, substantive people too. So I'm proud of that. I mean, that's just me having started in this industry when I was 19.
That's your background and people respect who you are.
Yeah, that's me 19.
Right.
You know, I'm
what
calling
about
people
say,
I knew 20 years ago.
I was going to say, I mean, like people need to. I think it's always this thing about they think it's happening overnight. They want it to happen quickly. They need it to happen. I mean, people need it to happen quickly because they don't want to do what they're doing. They want to be like doing the creative. But I mean, things take a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, like the meeting I had the other day, the pitch meeting, the first thing the person I saw was like, I don't have a lot of bandwidth right now. So if you can do this, you know, in just like 2 minutes and just tell me to log on and we can go from there. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I just started getting excited about it. She's like, no, just tell me the whole thing. Tell me the whole thing. Tell me the whole thing. And then
it's by 2 minutes you had her.
Yeah. Well, cause and then I just was my energy. And then as it was over, I mean, throughout the whole thing, she just got so excited and it was over. She was like, this is what we need to do. This, you know, and she was like, take your time. I come back in a month. And I was like, come back in a month. I can have these notes done, you know, like on Monday.
Exactly.
This is like not a problem. But I just realized, but it's like, you know what? This person is on a show that is in the middle of the room that they, you know, there's air dates already set, all this kind of stuff. It's like that's the thing. People don't have the time to drop what they're doing and run with what, doesn't matter how cool your project is, they just can't do that.
Well, here's something interesting too. And I mean, Sebastian might not have brought this up, but like, you can never, I mean, not ever probably, but most of the time you can't take any of it personally. Like you were saying about, you know, feeling like you're getting fired and people are being like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, like meetings get rescheduled all the time. Yeah. It's not about you. He's been trying to meet one of the mentors from last year is the head of Imagine now, Karen Lunder, who was the executive VP. And then she got, when Erica Huggins left and now she's president of Imagine. So he's meeting with the he's meeting the president of Imagine. She's had to reschedule about three times.
I believe it.
And you know, it's like you know, there's that sort of panic, like, I really want to meet the president of Imagine, and I really want him to meet the president of Imagine. She's also just the nicest lady. But, you know, it's like, they want it too. You know, they're like, listen, we're in a pitch war. We're in an auction right now, and she's got to go here, and she's got to go here, and, you know, when's he leaving? And we're going to make sure, you know, and they're confirmed. It's confirmed, by the way, Sebastian, for Tuesday. But it's like... Yeah, and, I mean, it's not about him.
It's not going to be in the world if you don't.
No, it's not.
You're still on their radar. Yeah. They still read the script. They still know what's going on.
Yeah. So I mean, there's always the Skype.
It's not like, I'm not important. It's like, no, there's something else going on. It's not about you.
I mean, and the thing
her
is...
Her job is on the line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the thing about when people, when executives reschedule... If they're really good about rescheduling and their people are good about, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I'm a blah, is that the thing I think is that everybody wants to be told a good story. And they're hoping that whatever comes across their desk is like is going to be that next good story.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's easier when if it's been vetted by a competition or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like, okay, so it's passed a bunch of rungs. So I know it's a good enough story at this moment. But how, and the question for them to saying at this point is, how good is it?
Right.
You know, and they're constantly saying, I got to reschedule because I want to hear this good story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but I can't right now because this may be like, you know, like $40 million that we got to spend on. You know, there's all that going on.
So many levels.
Yeah. So.
But Jenny's told me quite a lot. This is about the long game. This is all long term, you know, and it's something perhaps sort of aspirant writers should keep in mind that you have, you never know also who could help you. Like I got an agent in England and like a couple of years ago, and that was through a dear friend of mine who's a coordinator and a director's assistant, and she introduced me to a writer in the UK, and then that writer said, all right, let me introduce you to this, this agent.
That's,
you know?
That's what we should be doing.
Just keeping your mind open and being friendly and being patient is kind of good advice.
Let me ask you two more little quick questions.
Yeah.
So when you said you found out you won, instead of taking the calls, you decided to come to LA, right?
Yeah.
So let's just say you came on your own dime, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's, well, he got paid something, that's too.
I mean, there's a winning prize.
Yeah, there's a prize, but he's here on his own dime.
Right, that's important. I'm trying to show the audience this is the type of shit you need to do.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to be willing to take your own initiative, your own dime, whatever, to handle your business. Am I right, Chris?
Yes.
Right.
And by the way, I had to call him to make this uncomfortable call to him and say, I can't fit all these meetings in. You got to extend your time, which meant more money. Investment, more money. Nice. And he did it.
I've taken a big hit on my savings.
I'm sure.
But I hope, you know, I'm hoping
it's, see, it's not just savings. It's like you say, but all Siri always
says investment.
Investment. Yeah. Invest in yourself. There's no money better spent than once you invest in yourself.
Right.
And
you could have never met this many people that fast.
That fast, you know,
ever.
Ever. Sorry, this is the thing. I think a couple of podcasts ago, I was telling everyone about that guy, T. Harv Eker, right?
Mm-hmm.
This book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. He's always like, there's, you know, when you get your money, there's savings things you should do. You should always put a certain amount of money in education for your own education.
Mm.
And it's like, you get your money and break off your blah, 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 but make sure you put some in an education account that you don't touch until you need to do something that you know is going to help you. And it's like, you know, for instance, in this situation, if you'd been saving your education fund, this money could be spent on your education.
Yeah, because you could write all this off. Hey, smart.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I don't know how those British tax laws
are. That's why I said if you're smart.
You know, I
go, Trump figured the shit out.
Somebody figured it out. But you have to do that because you do, the worst thing, and it's something that I know from personal hardship on it, experiences, if you don't spend the money on something that you honestly think that you might help you or that other people are spending money on, then you might be setting yourself back where the long game now becomes 3-4 years longer, than it might have just been a year of hardship for you as opposed to now it's like four years. Because you gotta, like, if people are doing it, then that means you should be doing it too, or something similar. I find a way. Like, if nobody was going to that, you know, to the UCLA thing, then well, then don't go. Why would you go? But a lot of people are going. There's always packed. Got to get in. And people that we know who've been in it have, you know, it's like the careers change immediately once they get out, which means that you should do it. Or what's your guys? Remember the guy who was telling us that he did that? He created Pose.
Steven. He was in there with Michelle.
But he was saying he was doing it online at first.
Right.
And then he was like, I need to be real. I got to come to LA and take it there in person.
Right. He was in New York.
Yeah, he's in New York.
He's just taking classes online.
Yeah,
and he was like,
screwing classes online.
So much of it is about that.
And so he came here, spent the money. You know, he'd already been through school. He had a nice job somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, I got to give all this up because I want to do this.
Right.
You know, and you got to do that. You got to make the sacrifice.
Right. It's harder to do yourself. I think it's, I kind of like giving advice like that sometimes to friends, but like when I need to extend the trip, I was like, I'm kind of conservative with my money, you know, I'm still a bit too wary.
He cheap.
Cheap bastard. And then I just called a few friends, my dad. I was like, I should do it? Do you think it's worth it? He was like, yeah, do it, you idiot. You know, so I just
he's like, here's £5. You can go ahead and go.
but to me, the big thing is, it's one thing to be New York, Arkansas, wherever, Georgia, you got to come to LA, blah, blah, blah. It's still a flight, but he's coming from England.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot more kind of like riding on it, because I know there's some talking with Shane, you know, is that there's this, as much as we look at Hollywood as there's this mythic quality about Hollywood that we have as Americans. Mm-hmm. It's even bigger for people overseas. Like, oh shit, we're going not just to America, but we're going to Hollywood.
Right. Yep.
And there's a lot to that. And so you definitely say, I must make every minute there count. I have to, because it's not. Now, granted, you're lucky because it's been raining here. So, I say that because
he also has a good chaperone.
He's seeing an inside of his.
But what I'm saying is, there's no like the thing about LA too that I think people don't get is when you come out here is the distractions in this town will just rob you of everything. Yes. And next thing you know, 5 years have gone by. But it's like when it rains and stuff like that, and you just can't go down to the beach and hang out and like waste the day, or not waste the day, but you'd be there thinking I'll be there for an hour, and then you got to park, and next thing you're 4 hours have gone by. It's like, well, you know, stuff like that's not happening to you here, you know, and you're not tempted to go do that because you're like, look at these showers.
Boss has to get to his next meeting. They've been very carefully scheduled. But
That's good. Well, thanks, man. We appreciate having you, Sebastian. Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you.
Very much.
See, it wasn't that bad. We're just having a conversation.
No,
he's nice, you know. Soft-spoken British guy.
That's all right. He's pretending.
That's good.
I saw him at the club. He's a little emo music.
Getting down, you know, down in shots of Jaeger or whatever. Exactly, I'm doing this.
Well, people don't understand me sometimes. I went to see a couple of friends last night, and I asked for some water. Yeah. You know, and they had no. They might as well be speaking Korean. You know, no idea what I was saying. I had to say water.
We are cultural here. That's hilarious.
So what's next for you with your scripts? Anything you working on? What's next?
Yeah, well, I'm working on prepared like six pitches that I'm just like I'm not really pitching that much in the meetings actually. I'm talking about more of myself
that you have them
in case and particularly if like an agent is interested or something I mean some of them I've started writing, some of them I haven't. But as I said, they're quite diverse, they're very different. And what I tend to do is I tend to try and reach out to people I trust or know and say, how does that sound, what do you think of this, what do you think of this. And then if I feel the project has any legs, then I just go ahead and write it as quickly as I can.
Well, because also in England, they do a lot of treatments, you know, and people buy treatments in England.
I haven't, none of my treatments have been bought, but I find it really useful to summarize a story mm-hmm. really concisely, really well into right. a treatment form, right. even like one or two pages mm-hmm. before I start writing, mm-hmm. because then you know exactly what the, you know, what the premise is. What the
story well, yeah,
is.
I mean, it's always, to me, it's always about knowing where you start and where you end. Yeah. If you could see that,
yeah.
everything in between, especially yeah. if you understand structure, yeah. you understand where the story yeah. needs to rise and fall for exactly. the most part.
And if you're captivating you know? A reader just right. on a page of prose or two pages or something, then you're onto something.
Absolutely.
And then you start writing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I feel that, you know, treatments, whatever, that preparation before mm-hmm. you write, before you type fade in, is so critical. Because, you know, because you probably thought about, particularly if you're going to write it two pages and get it so it's captivating, you've developed a lot of what the character is in your head and figuring out what's the concisest way to say this on the page and make it pop. Mm-hmm. And that means that you're doing all that work that's necessary to make it work on the screenplay.
Right.
And then, like, pressing it down into, like, you know, three sentences.
Right. Yeah. And get in the habit. I'm sorry, Jenny. Mm-hmm. Get in the habit if you are or aren't already. Because you do TV and film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But just with your TV, you want to go even one step further. I'm not telling you how to change your process, just so you get used to writing the outlines, you know, about 10, 12 pages. Because as soon as you get a show, they're going to be expecting that.
Right. Yeah.
So just get in the habit of,
yeah.
you know, you wrote that one page, now let me expand on mm-hmm. the beats. You yeah. know, just to get in the habit.
Yeah,
if you're not doing it.
In prep for all of this, he started, you know, a Bible.
Good.
Obviously, mm-hmm. about five episodes, you know, that are really, mm-hmm. really
yeah, and
fleshed out.
Yeah, okay. series outlines and stuff like that.
Right. See. And then want to just talk real briefly about, like, Virus, because that's the thing that's kind of the pitch that
okay.
you're
okay.
following up with.
Yeah, sure. So it's a sort of, It's a feature,
mm-hmm.
And it's set in a post-apocalyptic world and some kind of in a wasteland where basically mm-hmm. humanity has most of humanity doesn't survive anymore. They've been destroyed by this pathogen, what's left of humanity is basically dependent on antiviral drugs.
Yeah.
And the antiviral drugs are provided by an institution called the VRI, the Virus Research Institution. and also it's also set in sort of desert wasteland because mm-hmm. This virus struggles to survive in this, right. you know, in the heat and you know, the dry desert conditions. And the story is about a lone bus driver called John Murray, who kind of self-serving, doesn't care about anyone, and he runs into seven children who are experimentation subjects of the Virus Research Institution mm-hmm. who have escaped. So he's forced to protect them initially. And then he decides he wants to abandon them. He can't, you know, he can't be responsible for them. He's responsible for himself. But each time he does, a new threat emerges. Mm. And then he's forced to stay by their side.
Right.
And then throughout the movie, there becomes a strong emotional bond between him and them and his want to sort of you know, abandon them becomes weaker, significantly right. weaker as he gets closer to them, and they start to see him as a surrogate father. And at the crucial point of the movie, he learns that they're actually carrying the cure to the virus, which could ultimately save mankind. And then he faces a dilemma: does he continue protecting them from suffering, or does he
save his wife?
Sell them
does he give them up for the sake of humanity, for right. mankind, just to rescue mankind and right. to himself because he's infected?
Right.
So tragically, he does end up giving them
up.
Of course,
you got to sacrifice yourself.
He gives them up, but then he decides. He realizes fairly quickly that the suffering he's.
Right.
put on them that he's going to have to go and rescue them again, and he gets some allies to go help him, and ultimately makes this.
Sounds like a big
sacrifice.
Adventure, almost like a Mad Max crazy zombie.
You know, I was going to say, it sounds like Mad Max meets Children of Men.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just like, that's cool.
The reason I liked it is because, I'm, you know, let me tell you how many post-apocalyptic scripts there are.
Oh, yeah.
There's a trillion. And, but this one has a real nice emotional connection that you don't mm-hmm. often get in that, you know, yeah. it's very, a lot of scripts like that, you know, are just very straightforward action or peril or whatever. And this one really focuses on the emotional connection between the kids and John. And that made a huge difference in sort of being like, yeah, you should go.
Let me just ask you really briefly, how did that one come to you?
The idea?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I wrote it a while ago. You know what's interesting about that, though, is that I didn't... It's the same kind of a folklore, is that I didn't over-prepare the idea. I kind of just... And it was something I really wanted to see, so it just came out of me fluidly.
The reason I'm asking is, as somebody who's probably listened to 1,500 or 2,000 pitches,
yeah,
the ones that get me, even if we're sitting in a room and they came in to pitch me a story, and I'm like, okay, I already have something like that, and I ask for something else, I'm still looking for a little bit of the origin. So, for example... Mm-hmm. You might say something, instead of just jumping into the pitches about this, I'll say, this is just a suggestion. I'll be like, well, there's this other one called whatever. So when I was a kid, there was this really interesting thing where blah, blah, blah. I was infatuated with this. Mm-hmm. So my story is about, but you know, it's just the transitions that most, we've talked about this 100 times on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Most writers go to pitch and they don't realize that they're pitching themselves more than even the story.
Mm.
It doesn't make sense, but it makes sense. Here's what I mean. So you come to pitch, right? And you start off pitching, just telling me what the pitch is. I'm sitting there going, can we afford John August to write this thing? You know?
John August.
No, I'm using him as an example.
I know.
And John knows. I use him as an example all the time.
I want to hire Bill Ray. You know, he's just, this is, you know.
You know, he just can't get bigger than that, so to speak. You know, and there's plenty more, you know, or Eric, I can never
Heiser.
Say that. You know, whatever. You know what I mean? Any of those guys, they're sitting there going, can we afford?
Right.
That, he could write that.
Right.
So if you tie in how you came up with it.
Then it's yours.
I'm going, nobody else can write it but you.
That's right.
Right.
I don't care if they give you give me five in a row. Mm. Tell me how it came to you, then tell me the story.
Well, see, that's the that's the thing that happens a lot when you are pitching television. And it also goes back to what you said, is like, there's 1,000 of these post-apocalyptic stories out there. Why are you the one to write it?
And why this one? Should we pick this one?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because it's
personal. Yeah. It's this. There's something that you can bring to it. Because every story that you know...
I always go back to my childhood. That's why I said that. When I was a kid, because it lets you know I have stories since I was a kid to now.
About this. You know? It lets you know... Again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about you got to keep like the integrity of the movie. And it's like... You know, in terms of like, and think about it as the movie.
Right.
And it's like someone who just can come in and just is like, I have this idea and I know this world and blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, there's hundreds of people who can come in and do that rewrite for a week to add this kind of texture.
Right.
But the heart of the story, the heart of any story is who, like, where's it coming from? That person has an insight to whatever it is
to make
it work. Because, you know, every story. I tell this, you know, this is something that I say to people all the time in my writers group, and I think they think I'm crazy because it's like every movie.
You are partly crazy.
Well, I am, but I mean, I'm not going to deny that.
See what you fell into, Sebastian.
But the thing is that you know, there's people start, you know, there's oh, this is my story, and blah blah blah. And I'm like, oh, you know what you do? Here are four movies you should watch. Right. They're like, oh, with your movies, they're like, you know, it's all stuff that people have not even seen.
Right.
You know, they've not even heard of. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, he told me this, like Ron told the story, and I was like, oh, there's this movie. And I was like, it's called The Knack and How to Get It. And everyone looked at me like, where the hell you come up with that movie? And never would have you seen it. I was like, yeah. But and I don't say it to say, that the idea that you've done has been done before.
Right.
I'm saying that watch that movie to see what they did, because it's because what they did and what you did is similar, but what you're going to do is going to be your own because of what you bring to it. Your characters are going to make it work, but they handled a similar type of story, you know? And that's the reason why, you know, people keep watching the same type of thing because it's like, oh, that's really cool, but it's the way that character handled that situation that makes it cool. And that character's reality works from what you bring it.
We call that the voice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's good.
On that note, thank you, Sebastian.
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter, Instagram, or anything? Can people follow you?
Nothing.
No, you know what? I'm not on
social
media.
It's 2019.
He is not on any social media.
Young millennial looking sucker.
But see,
I actually appreciate it.
Yeah.
See, the thing I'm curious about is how big is social media outside of the States?
I think it's big.
No, it's big.
But look, in the UK, look what's happened.
Yeah, it's fine.
He still hasn't, you know, he's.
Yeah. I was about to say I was making the joke because you know I'm hardly ever on there, and you know we have you know thousands and thousands of people listen to our show, and I barely have like 1,200 people on my maybe 2,000 people on my Instagram. I should have thousands. Right, I just don't have time.
You don't have time.
Right. I don't.
Yeah. I'm kind of a private person as well, so I don't really like, you know.
You just don't want nobody to see how many girls you got. So I got the videotape.
Oh, no. But anyway, we are on social media. Yeah. Finish Line Script on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And the Finish Line Script Competition on Facebook. Finish Line Script Competition on Instagram, and the website is www.finishlinescriptcompetition.com.
So basically, you put in Finish Line Script, you can find her.
That's right.
It'll be on
not
the,
hard to find.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes.
It'll be in the show notes. We'll put it all in the show notes.
And as to what you were saying about investing in yourself, we have just invested in ourselves, and we have a brand new website and everything. Awesome. So, it was time to upgrade, like, okay, we're here now, and this is what we're doing. So it's, you know, it's we're pleased with it, and it's a nice visual. Go check it out and enter. We're open for submissions.
That was that.
Be
that
the next that. 35 mentor winner.
Well, knowing you by the time it starts, we're like, we have 47 people in our
We'll see.
Well, we'll bring them back next year, whoever the winner
is. Thank you.
You know, that was up. Congrats, Sebastian.
Thank you.
This
is fun.
Where you at, Chris?
Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram.
That's what's up. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter. I say Twitter like I'm British. Like, you guys can find me on... you guys can follow the show, Screenwriters Rant Room. Screenwriters Rant. Screenwriters RR on Twitter. See, you fucking me up. On Twitter. You guys can follow the show. If you have any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you listen to. Follow the show. Subscribe. Share the show, all that other stuff. We appreciate it. We also have a Facebook page that I don't hardly ever promote, but I post on there. I just
Facebook knows anymore.
And then Lisa will be back in a couple of weeks, so that'll be fun. Yeah. We'll get back to the grind. Paul Guillo's gonna be on soon when he's back.
You talking to him? Okay.
Yeah, we were texting last night about some stuff. Let me think. So much stuff going on. Oh, please check out. They just dropped my new show, Deadly Class on Sci-Fi. It's got great responses. You know, my fucking phone was ringing off the hook. It was crazy.
Watch the, if you missed the pilot, it's like, it's on sci-fi.com.
It's on everywhere, too.
Yeah, watch that.
I think it's on Hulu and Amazon and all kinds of stuff.
And episode 2 is coming up.
Yeah, episode 2 drops. And I co-wrote episode 6.
Nice.
So it's a trip. It's a show you got to watch every episode, though, because it's very serialized based on the comic book, you know. So anyway, shout out to the whole team at Deadly Class. We appreciate y'all. We love y'all. So with that, you know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, Chris?
2019.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. You wanna be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Rant Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.